Gombo jeje jambe ya la cha ze lo kangge lo je tenye tenje nyen da nam da ra chi ni de gwe jeje seje ni je to ga le ba ma je kan da se be zu na ma re me do mo to ne ge ze Jozo gwen la po je ta ze yen la chu ju yang den sung Chu dara che jo nyo mo ni long le ge cha jo che ze je Ma ri me ze to nye nyo go chi nye chun ze ra di nam Tu ne ta je san ju da ze yen den lun zo ya ze do we Chudra chudra chunye kende talu mese jambi yang la du Arabaza nandi omo Arabaza nandi omo Arabaza nandi di 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 Jūjī mēdō dhamma rērā līngjī nyīndē kēmbā dē Sāngjē shīnlā mīdē bīwā yī Rūgīn nāmdā jīnlā chūbārā shū Nāmē dāmbā kēnāmā jī chūgī kālā kēnzī tīndē nē Jidara zame duja zima alaye samje chuje charba abdo se Guru rana mendala ganaya daya me Chuda zoye chonama laye chanjo bado tane jazo je Tagi chuje jibe sonama jen drola penje sanje endro barai sho. Je juda zonje chonama la chanju bado tane jabso je. Tagi chuje jibe sonama jen drola penje sanje endro barai sho. Juda zonje chonama la chanju bado tane jabso je. Tāgī chūjī jībī sūnāma jīn trālā pēncī sāngjī jīntū bārā shū. Sādā lāmē mēdā mīyān jī wāmbū tāng jāchīn lā sū chūjī chūlā chāvā chēbā nāma sāngjī sūmbā rābdū shēshīn tēvē gyū gyū bā tētā shējī tāmbē chūjī shēnī tē shēshī. Namo la ye gya da lo da ne jen ge drupon da da me ye gya nam da an do wa gwen ge chan nam chin zang ba tam jay gya do ta ge chö dun do. Oh yeah, good morning. We have new faces. You can take that away. He is not coming. Anthony is not coming. If there's no enough space, is it comfortable?
Someone can move up here.
Okay, let's do our ritual. Anybody want to share anything that you have applied or any insight that you gained? Yes.
I actually had an incident happen to me a couple of days ago.
Mm-hmm.
I was having precognitive thought of it happening, and I was being cautious of that day.
Mm-hmm.
The next day, I actually forgot, and then what happened, what I was presuming to happen actually happened, and then it told me to listen more into my instinct, and that's
what
I felt for this.
Okay, good. To be more mindful, isn't it? Anyone? Yes.
It's been an exciting week for us. We had a really rough family affair on Thanksgiving. And I had to use what I've been learning here in terms of handling relationships. My parents don't, they're not, my dad's very spiritual, but my mom and my stepfather are not. And I'm Thanksgiving, there was a lot of alcoholism happening, and so my sister finally said how she felt about the drinking and what it's doing to our family. It kind of turned into a big fight, but I had to treat them according to their illness. I know when I drank alcohol, it made me forget things constantly, and I wasn't. It makes you very not mindful. It makes you blunder through. So just the other day, my sister did not want to forgive my parents. She's still very upset, but my parents called me. My stepdad called me. He never calls me. Years and years, he called me maybe 3 or 4 times. It's always for an emergency or they really need something. But he called me, and he genuinely wanted to talk. And so me and Lisa just went over there the other day and made peace with them.
Okay, that's very good.
So I'm learning to not hang on to the flaws of people, because my parents, the alcoholism makes them think, makes them forget the things that are important, but then sometimes it's a funny double-edged sword, because then they forget the bad stuff they do sometimes. So it's easy, you know, I gotta remember that. So like when we fight like this, they don't hang on to that, but if I hang on to it, they will.
Okay, very good, very good. Yeah, that's very encouraging, that you are able to apply what you learn, you know. So that's important, yeah. You may know a lot of things, but if you don't apply even once, what is the point? But you know, and on the other hand, if you know a little bit, but you will try to put that in your daily life, that's very good. Thank you for sharing. Anyone? No pressure. I keep saying that, isn't it? Okay.
Well, then, there's the death and the impermanence. I have one child only.
Mm-hmm.
And he lives on the East Coast, and he's gotten engaged last fall of last year, and he's getting married in a few months, in 6 months. Long story short, He always comes at Christmas, and this time he's saying he's coming, but there's no plane ticket yet. There's no, I don't know when. So I've asked him a whole bunch of times, and now I'm not anymore, and I'm letting go of the attachment and whatever, because he must be under a lot of pressure now that there's different status in his relationship. So I'm just going to give him the space and just let it go. And that's, you know, I'm not on his case this time, demanding, you know. But there's a sacrifice.
Compromise.
Well, okay. because I don't know if he's coming.
But
it's also I can't plan with other people and things like that. So it's all right. It's okay. It's you know. Because I have some compassion actually, you know, for his situation.
Yeah.
Must be a reason why he's not coming through.
Yeah. Thank you. Anyone? Yes.
I have something to share.
Uh-huh.
2 days ago, I met one American woman.
Uh-huh.
Live in the same apartment building.
Uh-huh.
And then I saw that because a couple of weeks ago, she was asking, you know, I just checking my mail, and then she was asking like $10 bills, and do you have $10 bills? Can you please borrow me the $10 bills? She asked like a couple of people, and everybody says, no, don't have, sorry, you know. So I have $10 bills, I gave it to her, and then I told her that, don't worry, you know, you don't have to pay back me, you can keep it, you know, I said, and then she was so happy. So then I saw that, I met with this woman 2 days ago, and she said, oh, I'm sorry. I remember you. You're such a nice lady. You know. So which one is your apartment number? You know, like then there's a neighbor. You know. So I was about to not to tell you my apartment number because, you know, then maybe she will keep coming back. I took the resolution. Remember last week?
Uh-huh.
Resolution not to tell your line.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I keep that morning, you know, not to do kind of things, you know. So I thought, oh my God, I did promise that this morning, my life, and so I should be refrained, you know, refrained, whatever. So I said, I tell the truth, not lying, just not, you know, like the keep. So that's it's good that you have to, in the morning, you, you know, promise not to, you know,
Ten
commandments. It's a better way, you know, even though you don't do it, you know. So
yes. Okay, that's good. That's good. The power of resolution.
Yeah.
Okay. So today we have a big topic to discuss. And I'm not sure whether I can do justice to this topic. And as you mentioned, attachment is the source of problem. We all know that. If we are able to, let's say if we were able to remove the equation of attachment from our life, it would be wonderful. Don't you think?
Yes.
Especially, I think, parents. So difficult. I have friends who had real difficulty letting their child go to overseas to study. They are so attached. And sometimes attachment turn into, what do you call this? Possessiveness?
In control.
Yeah, in control. You want to control every action. And that's why I think we have something called new parenting style, called helicopter parenting. You hover around the child and every now and then calling, where are you? You see, she's laughing, she knows that. I mean, I'm talking about the girl. Maybe she must be thinking, oh, he's talking about my mother. attachment is really, really difficult. When my father passed away, I had to fill in the shoe, his shoe, as and then kind of become the father of the family. And there were instances where my mother and my sister will get into argument, and then both things that they are right. And there were times where I felt that, wow, this is, you know, samsara. And I know of my other friends, Rinpoche, who were brought to monastery at a very young age. I think maybe 2 years, 3 years. So for that, because of that, even though his family, parents all live in the vicinity, in the area, but he hardly visits. There's no, I mean, if I put in a nicer term, is there's no much bondness. There's no attachment. So whatever happens there, he is free of all that. And that time I felt that, oh, if I were like him, I would be, you know, free of this. So when you have attachment to your family, that's where you suffer. You are in the same, you know, situation, in the same condition, same predicament, where you feel helpless, there's nothing you can do, but you cannot ignore them, you cannot act indifferently. There is something there, so that's attachment. So normally we say that other afflictive emotions, it is quite easy to notice and also quite easy to remove or eradicate. Whereas they say that the analogy, the common analogy is that the other afflictive emotions are like the dirt on a cloth. So if there is a dirt, of course you can just rinse and it will be. You can remove that dirt. Whereas attachment is like oil on a cloth. When your cloth is dipped in oil, it very, in a very subtle way, it kind of, what do you call, cover, slowly kind of seeps in and then kind of cover all that area. And then it is so difficult to separate that. So that's attachment. So how does attachment arise? First we have attachment for ourselves. That's a big issue. All our problems, of course later we will discuss. But first I should explain why the topic. Why we are talking about reducing attachment. So I see that we can approach that from two perspectives. One is from the pure Lamrim perspective, from the purely from the steps for the person, purely from the stages or paths for a person to get to enlightenment. And then another one is from a secular point. So let me try to explain what I meant. So first, I think we need to understand about these three persons. In Lamrim, we talk about the person of small scope, person of medium scope, and then person of high scope, I guess. So we have these three persons based on the degree of capacity. And as a result, there's also varying goals. So for the medium, for the person of small scope, so their goal is to ensure a good rebirth, to achieve human or achieve birth in human or deva realm. Because they understand that if they fall in the pit of three lower realms, there is unimaginable suffering. So that's why the main goal is to make sure that, to ensure that they are not born in the three lower realms. So for that, they go for refuge, then they practice the karma, they abide by karma. So that's what is called the person of small scope. then the person of medium scope is that they are not satisfied with that. They see that even this life, if I practice well and if I'm able to ensure a good rebirth, but still next life, I'm still back in samsara. I'm still under the control of karma and delusion. And there's still no guarantee that the next life when I die, you have to die when I die, there's no guarantee that I will be not born in three lower realms. You have to take a life, but you don't have control. Your karma and delusion, your karma decides. So because of that, they see that as long as I am cycling in this existence, there is no freedom. There is no end to suffering. I will experience suffering all the time. So the goal is I want to achieve liberation, emancipation, or nirvana. It is mainly to be free from all these delusions. So that's their goal. So they are not just satisfied with achieving a good rebirth, next life, but they want to really be free from samsara, from this cyclic existence. So that is, those who practice that, those who have that kind of motivation, we call those people the persons of medium scope. And their practices are called the practices of medium scope. And then beyond, above, over and above that, there are people who feel that because those lower persons in lower scope, they are only concerned about themselves. I need to be free from cyclic existence. I don't care about other sentient beings. As long as I achieve liberation, that's about it. Whereas those people, what we call Mahayana practitioners, their thinking is that it is not right just try to liberate only oneself. It is very selfish because all mother sentient beings, they have been kind to us. And they even go further to say that everyone has been one's mother at one time. Actually, it's a numerous time. But during that time, they have been kind. They have taken care of us the way the present parents or the caregiver took care of us. So in this way, even in conventional sense, if somebody was kind to you, it is the way to reciprocate. Just to show indifference is not acceptable. So this way, that because of that, I need to help them. Because like me, just like me, they also suffer. Just like me, they also want happiness, but they are suffering. So I have to liberate them. But then at this stage, I don't have the ability, I don't have the capability to liberate sentient beings. So when will I be able to liberate them is when I achieve enlightenment. So because of this process of thought, so it says, okay, in order to liberate mother sentient beings, I want to achieve enlightenment. So the goal of the highest persons of highest scope is to achieve enlightenment, not for their sake, for the sake of other sentient beings. So we have these three scopes, three different people with varying mental capacity. So we need to understand that. So now here, when we talk, we already talk about first the precious human rebirth, how precious our life is, how much we can achieve if we utilize the full potential. And then in order to do that, we need to take refuge, we need to practice, we need to understand karma, and then abide by that. So that kind of ensures us from falling down to the lower realms. But that is not enough. That is not enough. So we need to aim to achieve liberation, freedom from samsara, where there is no suffering. So in order to do that, at the moment we are not able to do that because we are so attached to it, and we see qualities in it. We see things that are actually in nature of suffering. We see it as pleasant things. We see it as pleasure. Those things in reality are impure, but we see it as pure. So that's why this chapter of reflection on the flaws of our existence, this is when we reflect on the flaws, when we reflect on the shortcomings of our existence, then we are able to generate what is called renunciation. We're able to see what you call essence, no essence in this world. The things that we do, there's no essence. Then we see that, instead of being attached, instead of being so stuck with all these worldly things, we need to work towards achieving liberation. So that's the whole point this attachment comes from the Dhamma point of view. And now I think there's also, you can look at it from the secular point of view. What I can think of is that fundamentally, we have discussed this, that fundamentally we all want happiness. Whatever we are doing is actually doing for happiness. We want to avoid suffering. We want to achieve happiness. Even coming here, on the top level, on the surface level, you want to learn something. But why you want to learn it? If you prop that further, it is all boils down to wanting happiness and wanting to avoid suffering. So when we look at it now, if that is our fundamental wish, then happiness and suffering, as we have discussed, does not arise without a cause. It has to arise. It needs cause and conditions, causes and conditions. And one of the causes, main causes of our suffering, is attachment. We can tell. If we have strong attachment to a person, we know that we suffer a lot. That's why when whatever happens to stranger, we feel nothing. We are indifferent because we have no attachment. Whereas if something happened to your family members, something happened to a person you like, there's a lot of pain, a lot of discomfort. That's because we have this attachment. So, if our purpose or goal is to be happy and to avoid suffering, then to engage in attachment, it becomes incongruent. You wanted this, but you are doing something else. You wanted this, but you are doing something to create the other thing. So, I think that is one way to approach from the secular point of view. So there are two, I think we can approach that. So now the question now is, what is attachment? We all know. What is attachment? Attachment in Buddhism is different from Western psychological attachment theory. In psychology, attachment is good. They study, in the developmental psychology, they talk about this attachment theory. And the conclusion is, the stronger your attachment with your primary caregiver, the better. They say the outcome later in life, it is very good. And if your attachment if you are unable to develop a strong attachment to the primary caregiver, then, yeah, in the later life, in your adult life, you tend to experience a lot of difficulties, a lot of problems, a lot of issues. So that's Western psychology view. And they have come up with secure and insecure attachment styles. There are four types of attachment styles, so we don't need to go into. So in psychology or in Western view, the attachment theory is in relation to a child's bond to the caregiver. How strongly the child bonds, how strongly a child develops an attachment with the primary caregiver. Whereas in Buddhism, attachment is an individual's attitude that is associated with wanting to possess and then control and control people and objects due to misperceiving them. So because of that, there is a negative connotation. In Buddhism, when we talk about attachment, it carries a negative connotation. It implies clinging and grasping. When you have attachment to a person, you cling on to that. It is so difficult to separate. So there is a definition. So they have actually the scientific research. They have done this research. So this is from one of the published article. There's a mental affliction that distorts the cognition of its object by exaggerating its admirable qualities and screening out its disagreeable qualities. So this is so true. When you have attachment to a person, you see the person, the full 100%, all qualities. You kind of screen out all the, what do you call, the negative qualities. And I think this is very clear, especially for parents, for mother. No matter how ugly the child is, to the parent's eye, to the mother's eye, so beautiful. We use the phrases like, oh, cute, this and that, all this. So this is true. To the mother's eyes, yeah? Because you have so much attachment, you see all in the light of good. It's same with things. Those who have so much attachment to iPhone, you see all qualities are so good when you compare with another thing. And then we have already discussed that, you know, like car. If you have a new car, brand new car, a tiny scratch, so painful. But old car, even there's a big dent, you don't care. Don't feel anything. This shows that attachment is playing a role there. Why you feel so strongly about your new car, just a small scratch, is because at the moment you have so, attachment is so strong. So now the question is, how does attachment arise? You know this. This is the Tibetan, in Tibetan we call Sibokolo, the cycle of existence. This is just the inner peace. So we have ignorance. So ignorance is not knowing the reality of how I exist. We have this mistaken view that I exists independently. So there is independent I, absolute I there, which is not dependent on anything. There's this I. Because of this ignorance, because of this misapprehension, you develop attachment to I. That's when self-cherishing arises. And we all know that self-cherishing is real problem, real source of our problem. One time the Buddha that we revere, one time Buddha was like us. But now look at Buddha and look at us. Buddha is up there, being revered as an object of refuge. We are still in samsara. It is all because Buddha recognized that self-cherishing is the root of problems. And Buddha practiced all this to eradicate this self-cherishing thought and instead developed other cherishing thought. And as a result, Buddha is up there, we are still down here. So in Chunjuk, there is this word, Mangdo Sheda Chishiku. Tuba Shengi Tunze Da Chiba Rangi Tunjeba Tinikini Kabardus. So after explaining the disadvantages of self-cherishing thought and the advantages of other cherishing thought, and the conclusion is that I don't need to say much. I said, just look at the Buddha, where Buddha is and where we are. Buddha, the one who always others cherished. So that's the conclusion. So we know that once we have... So what happened is, when you have this self-cherishing, so you will do things to help sustain this I, and then those who are kind to you, to this I, then what happens? You develop attachment. And then those who oppose or threatens this I, you develop aversion or hatred. So that's how this leads to ignorance, leads to attachment, and ignorance also leads to hatred. So we call three poisons. Daja, Shedang, Timu. So it's all stem from ignorance. So in Lamrim, there are different ways, there are different methods to contemplate on the flaws of existence. There are eight types of suffering, or six types of suffering, and then three types of suffering. So when you go through this, we have to remember that this is not This is all for us to develop renunciation, to kind of develop aversion towards the worldly existence, worldly things, worldly pleasures. So these points are in relation to that. So some of these points may not directly relate to attachment, but I just want to let you know that because it is all about generating renunciation. So before we talk about the six types of suffering, we need to understand the three types of sufferings. So without this, there's no way we can be able to generate the renunciation, to develop aversion towards all these worldly pressures. So when Buddha taught for the first time the Four Noble Truths, the first Buddha's first sermon or first teaching, so Buddha taught the first thing is the Four Noble, the Noble Truth of Suffering. That was the first teaching. And then second, it followed by the second one is the Noble Truth of Suffering. But in terms of sequence, the causes comes first and then the result. So it, even though it looks like Buddha should have taught the noble truth of suffering first, and then the noble truth of noble truth of origin or cause first, and then the noble truth of suffering. But he didn't teach that way. There is a reason, because without realizing or without recognizing what is suffering, there is no way that you will be able to generate this desire or wish to be free from that suffering. If we don't know we are suffering, we wouldn't do anything. We will feel that, oh, we are okay, we are enjoying, this is a good thing. But when you realize that, oh, this is suffering, only then you will look for a way to separate yourself, to free yourself from that suffering. So there are three types of suffering. I know most of you are familiar, but just for the sake, if there are anyone who is new. So the suffering of suffering, that is, everybody can understand. The physical pain, having headache or what a body ache, all this, and then mental suffering, sadness, whatever, all this. So these are the suffering that we recognize as a suffering. Everybody recognizes as suffering. If somebody poke you with a needle, you feel pain. So we know that that's suffering. So these are easy. But the problem is the other two. For ordinary people, the other two, we don't see it. We don't perceive it as suffering. So that's why when Buddha achieved enlightenment, Buddha didn't want to teach. Remember that quote? Tujutabu chushini sulatenja kor menube memanagin nandu nebrachas. Buddha refused to teach because he says that nobody would understand. Because what Buddha is going to teach would be completely opposite of what people subscribe to, what people believe. So all these worldly pleasures, ordinary people, nobody view it as suffering. So that's why Buddha didn't want to teach. That's the reason. So now, once Buddha taught, so it's a suffering of change. Suffering of change are the pleasurable things that we find, like through your more of a sensorial pleasures, the beautiful sight, nice music, and then food. Anything in the world that we find pleasurable, these are suffering of change. And suffering of change, whatever pleasure we see it, actually it is not pleasure at all. It is just a lightened version of the suffering. Let's say if you are walking and walking and walking, even though you like walking, but if you walk too long, then you started to feel pain. And then when you sit down, then you feel relief and pleasure. So that pleasure is, what do you call, is in relation to that pain. So now that pain has kind of subsided. So you see that as a pleasure. We see that as a pleasure, but it is not. Like you like skiing, but if you ski too long, you get tired. So if these are real pleasure, then the more you engage in, it should, you know, make you more happy, but it does not. Whereas suffering, if you engage in more, it becomes more and more. More suffering, it doesn't get better. Whereas pleasurable things, when you engage or indulge in it more, it changes to suffering. That itself shows that in nature, there are suffering. And then the suffering of conditionality, or some translation called pervasive suffering. So pervasive suffering is our existence itself, this whole body, this combination of mind and body. This is the suffering, a pervasive suffering. We are conditioned, when we are born in this one, we are conditioned to suffer. Because of this body, we are experiencing all this suffering. In our brain, we have these the parts of brain which is supposed to signal you all this pain, and they are wired in such a way that when you met with a stimuli, your this brain kind of sends signal and you feel pain. So if our brain is not wired in that way, we wouldn't feel pain, we wouldn't feel suffering, we wouldn't feel mental agony. This is all because of our body. So that itself. So normally the analogy for these three is given a rash. When you have a rash, it's so itchy. And if you scratch, it is so nice, isn't it? When it's so itchy and you scratch it. But if you continue scratching it, what happens?
It spreads.
It spreads and also it becomes painful. It's no longer that relief and that pleasure. So these, why you have this first two? First of all, this itchiness, that's suffering. That's the suffering of suffering. And then when you scratch it, you feel that pleasure. That is like the suffering of change. And why you have these two in the first place is because you have the rash. So rash is like the suffering of conditionality. So once we understand this, then we will be able to kind of see the flaws of this existence. Remember, there are six types of sufferings, the reflection. So the first one is the fault of uncertainty. You must be wondering, what is this picture? What is this image? So once we are born in this existence, there is no certainty. So there is a father, mother, something. So there is this story. Let me paint you a picture. Those who read Lamrim, you would know. So there was this. Let's imagine. Let me try to describe, and then you form your picture. So it's a family dinner. So there is this father, and then on the father's lap, there is this boy, son. The father was holding the son, and then the boy was trying to eat a fish. And then, as he was trying to finish, almost finished, and their family dog was on the ground there, and he went for the fish. And the father beat the dog. So that is the scene. So this is Shariputta. He eats his father's flesh and hits his mother. The enemy he killed sits on his knee. A wife gnaws her husband's bones. Samsara can be such a farce, such absurd, isn't it? So Shariputra, he has clairvoyance. So when he saw that image, so using his that mental power, that realization, he checked the previous life. So in previous life, there was this, the husband. The husband's father likes to fish. They have up in their at the back of their house, they have a pond. In that little pond, that father likes to fish. And because of that, he was born as a fish in that pond. That's the father. And then, the mother, his mother, who is so attached to the house, was born as a dog. And then, their neighbor, who was so attached to his wife, and there was some incident, and he killed, and he died. And because he's so attached to the wife, born as a son, their son. Did I cover all? Yeah. So now in this...
Father has
Yeah, you have it all.
Yeah. So now what happens? The boy that he is showing so much love and caring was the enemy that he killed in the past life. And then the fish that he killed from their pond was the rebirth of reincarnation of his father. And then the dog who went for the fish and who got bitten was his mother. So Shariputra is saying that, look at the life, uncertainty. So he's saying that there's no reason, no point clinging to this all whatever life we have. And then that's this life and other life. But in this very life, we do all kinds of things because of our attachment to friends, we have these labels, my friends, my son, my family members, all this. And when they are friends and they are those who are close to you, we label them as my friends, and they kind of falls in your inner circle, and then you are so attached to these people. So here it is saying that even this life, there is no friend or enemy from its own. You are just giving a label there. And it is unreliable. There's no certainty that your friends will remain friends forever. Morning's friend can become evening's enemy. Or evening's enemy can become the next day's friend. So basically you're saying that there is no reason to have this strong attachment to those people who are close to you, because there's no certainty. They may become your worst enemy. Even family, even parents and children. There are many cases where parents and children are like enemy. They cannot stand each other. But one time there was so much love. And then your sibling, same way. So all this there is uncertainty. So why we are engaging in all kind of negativities? Because of our attachment. We do all kinds of things. Parents, especially parents, do so much for children. And there are things where, father or the mother engage in criminal acts just to help their children. So these are lines of, contemplation, reasons to think about. If you have so much attachment to a person, your friend or whatever it is, then you think that will not remain. It's mainly we are meditating on using the impermanence. So most of the time, we form attachment with this assumption that our relation will last forever. Even in relationship, boy-girl relationship, some when they break up, people commit suicide because they never expect that this will happen. They always kind of this assumption that it's permanent, it will last forever. So when this happens, it's like unexpected. It is not unexpected. You or we had this unrealistic expectation. Because of that, when the moment comes, it is it's too much to bear. But if you already have this understanding about impermanence, at the moment, we are in this, but this will not really last, so no need to be, so attached to that. If you have that kind of thought all the time, when things go wrong, you will be able to cope well. The separation won't be so unbearable. You will be able to cope. So this is all about this. This point is to meditate on the impermanence nature of things to reduce attachment. And then the second point was the fault of insatiability. We do all kinds of things. We pursue all kinds of things. But it says that in this existence, whatever we do, there is no satiation. Everything is insatiable. Anybody has Labradors? Dog.
Dog.
Has anybody owned Labrador? No. Okay. Labrador, did you notice that, you know, they can eat and eat and eat. They say that, you know, we in brain, when we eat, when we feel full, brain signals that you are full. That's when we feel full and we stop eating. But they say that in Labradors, there's something is faulty there. So they don't get the signal that you are full. That's why they keep eating. If you give whole bag packet, they will eat. That's why you look at the labs, all are really chubby. Because they don't know, I mean, when they are full. So anyway, the point here is that, you know, as I mentioned that, how attachment arises, first, of course, through ignorance. Ignorance, tambo nga she thala, cha yu che thagi di she, mo la cha gibas. So first, you develop this attachment because of this misapprehension of, you know, I as independent. So we develop this attachment to I. And then you started to develop attachment towards the possessions. My, this is my, that is my. So what we do, I mean, in this world, because of that attachment, like we chase after money, we chase after a house, we chase after a car, all this. So here is saying that no need to be so attached to all these things because desire has no limit. The more you engage in, the more you attach to things, there will be always another one. I think we have discussed in the first class where they did this research. They asked people, what would make you happy, happier? And remember those who are earning 20, 25,000, they say, oh, if I earn 50,000, I would be happier. And then they ask those who are earning 50,000, and they say, oh, if I earn 100,000, I would be happier. And then they ask the same question to those who are earning 100,000, and they say, I would be happier if I earn 200,000. So you see, there is no limit. As long as we don't have the contentment, there is no limit. So that's why those, consumerism, is it? It's based on that. They rely on our greed. If we are able to have contentment, then finish. They cannot sell. Like phone, let me tell you, it's a bit unrelated, just to tell you. Maybe I've already told. My earlier phones are Nokia phones. So when I had the Nokia phones, there is no satisfaction. Every time when I pass through a phone store, I would go in. I must go in and look at what new models. And then, yeah, somebody gave me iPhone. At that time, I think 3G, that bulky one. After I got that, I can say that I stopped going into these phone shops. I was so satisfied. It's like there's no need to look for another one. This is so good. So there was this satisfaction, real satisfaction. So I don't know whether when they said you cannot have satisfaction, I had. Yeah. So like this. So what was my point actually?
Contentment.
Yeah, contentment. So when you have, as long as, yeah, unless you have contentment, so there will be limitless things to be attached to. So it will never end. You have a nice car, but with that you want a bigger car. And when you get a bigger car, you want another one. It's same. When you have not much money, you are okay. Then when you started to make a bit money and when you started to save, you see that, oh, now it's, oh, I'm able to save 10,000. Then you become more stingy because you want to increase that. Oh, 10,000, I can make it to 20,000, 20,000, 30,000. That's happened. So basically it's saying that, you know, when you have this attachment to all these external things, tell yourself that, you know, unless I put a stop, unless I develop this contentment, it will be endless. If at the moment I have attachment for this one, but once I get this, I will have another one. I will find another object to be attached to. So you tell yourself that there's no end. So that's one way to reduce. I just want to show you this. I think you saw it.
काश मेरे पैर सलामत होते और मैं चल सकता.
So you see, when you have a nice sports car, you're still aiming for that one. You don't realize what you have. And then that person, you see, he's wishing for a cycle, and that person, he's wishing for a leg that can make him able to walk. Okay, let's stop here and enjoy the tea, please. Okay. And the next is the fault of repeatedly losing one's life. So this is directly in relation to developing renunciation. So this is to say that, you know, if we don't engage in meaningful practices that can lead us away from samsara, then yeah, we will experience this. We will continue taking rebirth in samsara, and we have taken so many lives, and still we are in this situation. So that is because that during our lifetime, during all that life that we have taken, we were unable to do anything meaningful, anything of essence. So we have been repeatedly engaging in all this, what is called the worldly wonders or cyclic
concerns.
Yeah, concerns, worldly concerns. And also we have been chasing after all these pleasures, worldly pleasures. So when we reflect that we have repeatedly lost our life in this way, then yeah, we will see that we will be able to see or realize the meaninglessness of our actions in this samsara. So that is supposed to help us propel towards doing something more meaningful that will help us to free from the clutches of our delusions and karma. And then, not only that we have lost so many lives, but we also have to take rebirth. And as we mentioned earlier, that, you know, when we die, even though our bodies will be cremated or buried or whatever it is, but our consciousness still continues. So when it continues, we don't have our freedom to choose where we want to be born. If there is freedom, of course, we don't have to worry about that. We can engage, we can spend, we can indulge our whole this samsaric life in the pursuit of all worldly pleasures. But then it's saying that, you know, we have to die, and then we have to take rebirth again. And that rebirth is determined by karma, our karma. So our karma, we engage in karma because of our delusions. So as long as we are not able to eradicate all these afflictive emotions, such as the ignorance, hatred, attachment, we will be continuously cycling in this way. We will be born, we will again die, born, die. But then, if we are able to be born continuously as human beings, that's not a big deal. It is still something. But most of the time, I think in when we discuss about the human rebirth, we talk about this, the turtle only comes above the water surface, only after, I don't know, eons of years, most of the time remains underneath. So that is to show that most of our lives we will be born in the lower realms. So when we are born there, it says, Tāgī chūpa tīndēni. Oh, what is that? Tāgī chūpa tīndēni. Basically saying that from my actions, there is no way that I will be able to achieve a good rebirth. It's most likely that I will be born in the lower realms. And then once I'm born there, tīkwa bhaji kewa mēs. Once I'm born there, it's just continuously creating negative actions. You can look at the animals. Once you are born as animals, there's no way they can do something virtuous. First of all, they're so ignorant. They don't understand what is to be abandoned, what is to be cultivated. They don't even understand what is virtue, what is not virtue. And if you try to teach them, no way they understand that. So constantly look at the dogs. If they see a squirrel, the first thing, their instinct is to go after and kill them. If they see a rat, first thing is to go after. There's no sense of, oh, killing is not good. Killing is non-virtue. No way. No way you can teach them. So imagine if we are born in, we are talking about animal. Animal, at least, there are times where, you know, there's no suffering or pain. They can have kind of normal, kind of neutral feeling. Whereas if you are born in hungry ghosts or lower, in hell realms, all these things, it's 24 hours incessantly you go through suffering and pain. There's not even an instant to think about Dharma. When we are suffering headaches, a severe headache, you cannot even think of doing practice. And that's most of us, oh, I'm not well, let's skip our prayers. So we don't want to do, because pain is so intense that these thoughts does not arise. These thoughts do not arise. So this is also to help us what do you call, what is the word now? Help us get away from being attached to all these worldly things. And then the fault of constantly fluctuating from high to low states. This is relevant to attachment. Many of us are attached to fame, name, status, praise, all this. So it is saying that no reason, no point to be so attached to all this status. Because it fluctuates. Even if you are able to, after putting so much effort, you may achieve that goal, but then it is not stable. It is not permanent. It fluctuates. Look at, like, American politics. Michael Flynn, he was a general. He was one time, what was his position? The defense. Secretary of Defense. Now he is criminal now. He's being charged. So you go up there and then you may, there's a likelihood of going to prison. So you see. And then also wealth. We put so much effort chasing after wealth. But rich, when you become rich, it's not stable. We know that people who are billionaire in the morning, but are penniless in the evening. You lose everything. You may lose everything. So no point, you know, working so hard, so attached to all this. So this is what it is saying. I think that the Malaysia Prime Minister, former Prime Minister, he was so powerful. And now they have frozen his accounts. He had to raise funds to pay for his bail. So one time you are billionaire, and then the second moment, you have nothing. So this is to teach us that don't put so much effort, don't waste your time and effort cultivating all this wealth, fame, status, which is not stable. Instead of saying that, instead of doing two shifts, just do one shift and spend the other shift doing practice. Isn't it? So that would be more meaningful. And then the fault of having no companion. So you work so hard, you amass so much wealth. In the end, this is all you get. Isn't it? Yeah. Even billionaire, of course, billionaire will have a marble that tombstone. And maybe as a flower or something. That's all you get. In the end, you have to go alone. You have engaged in all kinds of negative actions to help those whom you are attached to. But in the end, you have to carry that. Whatever negative consequences, only you have to bear that. Even though you are surrounded by people, thousands of people, because of your wealth or whatever it is. But when the time comes, you are the only one. You cannot, of course we know that you cannot take your wealth, your possession, your property, your friends. Even you cannot ask your life partner to come with you. You have to travel. You have to go alone. So you're saying that why, if that is the case, it's just for let's say 100 years, if you live 100 years, just for 100 years, why are you wasting your time? After that, you have to leave everything. And sometimes, you know, all that wealth ends up with somebody who you don't even know. What is the whole point? So you have to do something that you are sure that you can carry with you. That is the Dhamma practice. If you do Dhamma practice, if you practice that, serve as an antidote to all the, antidote to attachment, afflictive emotions, all this, then yeah, you can carry with you. Otherwise, in the end, just this. So from all this, we can make few conclusions. The first is, there is nothing in cyclic existence that can be trusted or relied upon to provide true or lasting benefits. So that we talk about, we are in the pursuit of all these worldly pleasures, but in nature they are suffering. Nothing remains. The more you engage or indulge in that, it changes to suffering. So why are we putting so much effort in these things? It's like what you have something called a sand castle.
Yeah.
So if you put so much effort and so much attachment to a sand castle, what would people think? You are so stupid. Why are you doing this? This is just a sand castle, just a wave and it's gone. So likewise, this is what I'm saying. But when you see, when this sand castle, we think that, oh, it's so stupid. But what we are doing actually, if those Arya beings, when they look at us, it's like same thing. They see us doing same thing, the sand making sand castle. And the second conclusion is, however you indulge in the pleasure of cyclic existence, in the end, you will never find perfect satisfaction. We know that. We know that. We work so hard to make $1 million. After that, no. You are not happy. You think that you will be happy, but no. You want more. That's not enough. And I know, I won't say I know, and there is this person who owns a bank, and he is billionaire. But when you really look at him, you don't want to be in his shoes. He starts work as early as 7 or 8. He will be in the office and leaves office at 8 or 9. So, why? You have enough money. But I feel that way now. But when I become, you know, that kind of millionaire, when I see that, if I work, I can really multiply that money, I may be a different person. My opinion will be changed. So that's the fault with us. There is no satiability. There is no limit. We have difficulty saying that I have enough. This is all I need. We want more and more and more. And then when you realize it, it's too late. It's time to go. Then you have been experiencing this suffering, samsaric nature, since beginningless time. So this is to really avert us from engaging in all this, and instead do something meaningful. We have been doing this, whatever we talked about, all this, the pursuit, according to Lamnim, it says that we have become billionaires 1,000 times. We have become kings, we have become presidents, or what do you call, the prime ministers, the wealthiest people, Bill Gates, all this we have become. And we have also become a homeless person, a beggar. Not just one time, many, many times. So that's why it is called cyclic existence. We cycle in that. So as long as we don't do something about our delusions, as long as we don't do something about our ignorance, the root of all that problem, we will continue cycling. So this is mainly for us to divert our attention from engaging in all these worldly things to doing real Dharma. Then you will be able to sever that cycle. then this cycle will stop. Then there's no way to go round and round. You can go straight. So that's the conclusion. And that's it. We are not going into this 8 types and all that. But this, don't you think this is a nice shot? This one. This is taken from the iPhone. We took it in Colorado, spring. Colorado spring, there's a mountain zoo or something in there. What do you call this?
Garden of the Gods?
Yeah, I think so. No. Is it Garden of the Gods?
Yes.
Or is it, they call it mountain?
Big sandstone.
Mm.
There's also Pike's Peak.
Yeah, I think so. Okay. I think so, yeah. So there was. So this, I don't need copyright. This is my own. Yeah, so that's about it. So any questions? And then, yeah. So we, this is the last class for 2018. Yeah. So we, the next class is only in January. I think it's 14 or 15. So we will having a Christmas and New Year break. So there will be no class, and then we will continue from next year. In next year, continue in next year. Mm. If no questions, then thank you very much.
You should say the.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hey.
I was so excited the class is over. She said, forgot about this. Okay.
This is our thing. We'll start with the mandala offering, the short mandala offering, and then the concluding prayers.
Pyeje choje me do dam re ra len je nyen de gen ban de san je shin do mi de bu wa ye do gwe nam da shin la che ba ra sho ron na men da la ga na Rimbo je ma je ba na ke yo je ke ba nyam ba me ba ya Kone kondo pe warai sho. Kuzi rabden jen namgara tile chojuru jeba dan. Lozan tenbe tume sasumji. Chove muse dado ne gyuro je. Korwe shengama so pendan tewa malu. Jire zinwa tenzin jazo yi, shabe sede pado ten gyuro chi. Jidara kenpa dan, gundo sambo tenyan deshindu. Teda kunjin jesu talo chi, kewa teda tamje rabdo mo. Kewa tamje ngowa kala chodo ngaba de taje kewe tsawan digun kyang sambo chuji rabdo ngowa rai ji.